from Silver Hollow Audio and Radio Catskill, this is Cats Cast. I'm Brett Barry, and each week we bring you stories and conversations rooted right here in our mountains and valleys. Local culture, history, sustainability, nature, literature, and the arts, and lots more. Coming up, a special session with singer and songwriter Ginger Wynn, a South Carolina native whose work brought her to the Hudson Valley.
So we explored the city for a few days, which was super cool. I've never been to Manhattan, really. Then we come up to Boyceville, New York, which is in the middle of nowhere. And I'm like, these people, they're going to kill me. Like, this can't be real, because they take me to Boyceville. There's no phone service. I'm staying in like this, you know, adorable but very small little Airbnb, and I'm like, this can't be real. Like, I started sharing my location with my sister. I'm like, I don't know, Davis. Like, this is really cool, but like, I don't know if this is real.
First, this news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Nora Rahm. The Supreme Court has granted the Trump administration's latest request to pause SNAP food aid payments, leaving millions of Americans in limbo. The temporary stay issued last night comes as the administration is appealing a court order requiring it to pay recipients full benefits for this month. NPR's Gigi Dubin reports.
SNAP recipients in several states, from California to Wisconsin, had just begun seeing money loaded up on their EBT cards to buy food. Those states acted once a federal judge this week ordered the Trump administration to restore SNAP funds by Friday. The same day it said it would comply, the Trump administration appealed the ruling all the way up to the Supreme Court, which kicked the case back to an appeals court. In the meantime, many states still haven't distributed November SNAP benefits, and it's unclear whether states that have will be reimbursed. Gigi Dubin, NPR News.
More flights were canceled or delayed today because of the government shutdown. The Federal Aviation Administration ordered 40 major airports reduce flights because of a shortage of air traffic controllers forced to work without pay. NPR's Joel Rose reports the airlines have some discretion in how they meet those targets.
Delta Airlines said that it would operate the vast majority of its flights as scheduled, but that the frequency of those flights to some destinations might be limited. American Airlines said the impact would be mostly on its regional flights. And United Airlines has published a full list of the flights that it is canceling through the weekend. And it includes flights to or from many smaller markets. So, you know, we may see that these mid-sized and regional airports that don't have as many flights to begin with, they are probably going to share in this pain, too.
NPR's Joel Rose. This is day 37 of the government shutdown, the longest in U.S. history. Until now, the longest was 34 days in 2019. During the first Trump administration, senators are working this weekend. The House hasn't been in session since September 19th. A new national survey shows that polarization in the country is taking an emotional toll on Americans who say societal divisions are stressing them out. NPR's Ritu Chatterjee reports.
The survey by the American Psychological Association finds that 62% of adults say that social and political divisions in the country are a major source of stress. And they were more likely to say they feel socially isolated than those who aren't as bothered by societal divisions. Psychologist Vail Wright with the American Psychological Association says stress and social isolation have long-term health consequences.
Often those are manifested in both physical symptoms and emotional symptoms that can look like headaches, fatigue, stomach problems, as well as increased levels of depression and anxiety.
Ritu Chatterjee, NPR News.
This is NPR News in Washington.
This is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. As airlines cancel hundreds of flights to comply with an FAA order aimed at gradually cutting air traffic by 10% at dozens of the nation's busiest airports, many questions remain about how the changes will affect travelers. Elizabeth Carey from AAA Western and Central New York says travelers should be prepared to make alternate plans.
Yeah, travelers should definitely have a plan B just in case, to be on the safe side. So if your destination is within driving distance, for example, you're talking Thanksgiving travel, a lot of people go to New York City. You could easily drive there. If you're not capable of driving there, taking the train there is another option.
Carey says travelers who have flights completely canceled can and should ask for a new flight, a flight voucher, or your money back.
So it could get hectic if flights start getting canceled. And so travelers really have to advocate on behalf of themselves. So if you have travel insurance, a government shutdown isn't necessarily covered under travel insurance. But if your flight is delayed and you're going to lose, say, half of your trip, that trip interruption protection would kick in there. So if you miss a flight because the TSA lines were too long, you wouldn't be covered under something like that. So that's why it's so important to get to the airport early, just in case. So you always want to have travel insurance just for peace of mind, and hopefully you don't need it. Usually it's not too expensive to add on to, say, flights or a trip or something like that. But there is small print, and there's different levels of travel insurance. So those are the things you should consider in a situation like this.
This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Imaginable Futures, envisioning a future where learning sparks opportunity and thriving belongs to everyone. Learn more at imaginablefutures.com. And the listeners who support this NPR station.
The cries from within.
Welcome back to Cat's Cast. I'm Brett Barry, and I had the opportunity to speak with singer-songwriter Ginger Wynn between concerts here in the Hudson Valley, with two more coming up, November 15th at the Falcon in Marlborough, New York, and November 21st at the Park Theater in Hudson, New York. Ginger hails from South Carolina, but music brought her to the Hudson Valley, where she now resides in Kingston, New York.
Walk down the pathways past trauma and breezeways to my center. And we'd get wrinkles together and hold hands until our last breath, and split lattes and pancakes on one of our last breaths.
What a beautiful way to start an interview. Ginger Wynn is joining me in my studio in the Catskills. And Ginger, welcome. It's great
Thank
to have you.
Thank you for having me. The view that I'm staring at right now, which is the raging river and a Lego set. That is a band, Legos, because my brother's really into Legos. And I'm like, I'm totally sending him a picture of this.
Yeah, my daughter made that Lego set. She's a musician as well.
Oh, cool. And cool.
Going to school for it right now.
That's awesome.
So you were just strumming a tune there called what?
It's called Pants on Fire. And this is like one of my jokes on stage is when I introduce the song, I'm like, this is a song about telling someone it's going to be forever. And then it's not, and you feel like a liar. So it's called Pants on Fire. And then everyone chuckles, and yeah. I'm like, that just, it was never a joke, but I guess it's funny, like when I say it or whatever. But yeah, that's been like one of my, not most recent, but a more recent song.
Yeah, because Pants on Fire is a very grade school dig, so that's probably why it gets a chuckle.
Yeah, probably. And it's like, you never really hear that in a song, I guess, which is cool, because I've taken a couple of songwriting courses, and one of the things I've learned is it's not that you should do this or there's a right or wrong way, but it's nice to have like a real term, for instance, like Pants on Fire or Stop and Stare. You know, I was taking Ryan Tedder's course of One Republic, and if you put that into a song, it's like instantly relatable. But like, especially if you find a saying that isn't really used a lot, and then you're like, huh, like I wonder what that could be like in a song. It's like a really good starting place sometimes.
How do you start? Does it start with words or a melody, or do you just start doodling around on the guitar?
So I work with a co-writer, and he's also my record label, and you know, they're also my managers. It's a husband and wife duo, and he's a poet slash lawyer. And so oftentimes he will send me like a stream of consciousness is what he calls it. And it's just like, sometimes it rhymes, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it's just like a collection of thoughts. Usually it's in sort of a poem format, whether it rhymes or not. And so that's sort of sometimes where I start. That's kind of like how I prefer to write. I love collaborating, because when I write myself, it's almost like it just feels, sometimes to me, it just feels flat, almost just like a white piece of paper. But if I'm collaborating with people and they give me like this, I almost view it as like a piece of clay, then that's like vaguely shaped into something. Then I'm able to take that vaguely shaped clay and sort of like see what the clay wants to be based on how it looks. That's sort of how I see it.
And music's in your blood. You grew up in a very creative household. Can you tell me about where you grew up and a little bit about your parents and how that creative spark was there from the beginning?
Yeah, so I definitely have a musical family, even like beyond my parents. My uncle, he's in South Carolina, and so, you know, so is most of my family. And he's had this concert venue for, I think it's maybe 20 years now, every single Wednesday, all year long. It's outdoors. And through the hurricanes, through the winter, he has like a 3-hour show every single Wednesday. And so you can only imagine like how many artists he knows, how many people he knows. And people from all over the world come out there. It's called Awendaw Green. And I started playing there. I remember the first time I played, I had just turned 12, because one of my songs says I was 11. I was like at the time 11 when I wrote it. And I was like, now 12, when I was on stage. So that was really fun. I was playing, I think, with my mom and my dad. They were both on stage. And so that's my uncle. Now going to my parents, my dad, he played pretty much anything. Like, he could pick up anything and just sort of hear like what sounds good. So we could pick up a bass. He was really good on piano. He just sort of composed, wrote stuff, couldn't read music, played by ear, and didn't even know chords. And then he played ukulele. That was his main instrument. So he taught me ukulele when I was literally like 2. Like, he just gave me a ukulele as a baby and was like, just here's a ukulele. And I guess I sort of took it and like showed an interest as I grew older. So he gave me like the initial music bug. And then my mom, when I was 9, decided to teach me guitar.
And she's a songwriter.
Yeah, she's a songwriter. And she also taught me like writing and gave me this, like planted the seed, you could be a songwriter. Because her fiance back in the 80s, his name was John Brennan. He like has written with the Eagles. He toured with Shania Twain and Toby Keith, I think. Yeah. Like, this is all back in the 80s. So he was very much in the, and he was a songwriter, not just a performer. He wrote songs, wrote for the Eagles, wrote for Whoopi Goldberg movie or whatever. He like role modeled this songwriter lifestyle.
So you were really bathed in creativity throughout your childhood.
Yeah.
And I understand that you and your mom would put out an album every year.
Yeah, yeah.
As for a family project.
It was like a family project. It was business too. Like, it was definitely like we were creating a music business. And for 10 years, every single year, usually we would be recording in Scorpio season in November, October, November. Yeah, we would record an album every year. And so that just led to so many songs being written and like really honing in on songwriting skills. And at like 15 or maybe 13, she was like, you know, you could quit school and do this full time. And I was like, really? Like, I didn't know that was an option. And so from like, you know, 13 or 14 onward, I was like, yeah, I'm like quitting school. Like, why am I here? And so I quit high school. I think I was like 16. Like, I was as young as you could be. And then from then on, you know, from 16 to 26 now, I've just been like music, just doing music, except for the little brief section that I was a pastry chef.
Yeah, I mean, leaving high school for a career in music is usually a suggestion that comes from the kid. It's pretty unusual for the mom. So she must have really seen your potential.
Yeah, she did. She did.
Or heard your potential.
Yeah. Which is a blessing, you know, having your parents, at least one parent support. My dad at the time was like, you're not quitting school, but, you know, obviously my mom allowed it. Yeah. But yeah, having a parent support was extremely helpful.
And then, so I think one of your first gigs was with a band called Pondering Wade.
Yeah. Yeah. So
at 16?
So they were in North Carolina. I quit school around that time. And that was like my first project being like a full-time musician. And so they were in their 30s, like this band. And I was 16 at the time. And they also wanted a violin or viola player. So I was like, I could learn that. So I told them I could play it. And I quickly learned how to play it by tuning my viola like a guitar. And so all I really had to figure out was, you know, because there's no frets, where to put my fingers, muscle memory. And so that was like my first project. They were an African Celtic band. So there were bouzoukis and djembes and just like, you know, Irish bouzoukis and just all these like interesting instruments, like a penny flute, I think one of them played. And it was a very fun project. We had them in the studio. recorded a couple albums. I don't think we ever even really released it. A lot of the stuff that I would record as a young kid was just, we put it on CDs just to sort of organize the songs so we had them. But yeah, that was my first band. And of course, with any band, egos, personalities clashing, it didn't last very long, but it was really fun.
I hope they were friendly to the 16-year-old member.
I was the sidekick. I was in none of the drama. I was like, this is fun, guys. Like, come on. But it was great. It was really great. They were definitely a huge influence on me, these girls. It was three girls and then a guy. And the three girls were just such powerful artists. They were true artists. And I think it was really inspirational to me at that age.
What other inspirations do you draw from?
So definitely John Brennan, the guy that my mom's fiance that was a songwriter. When I was a young child, my dad would play Queen, like specifically Queen. That's like a core memory in his car. He would just blast like another one bites the dust and another one down. I was just like singing along at six. Like, I don't know what any of this means, but it's so cool. Bohemian Rhapsody, I thought that was just the coolest song. So Queen, he really liked Led Zeppelin, like old school rock. My parents are both born in, you know, the late 50s, so they were teenagers in the 70s, or, you know, wow, young kids in the 70s listening to 70s, 80s music. My mom really liked Madonna. Fleetwood Mac, they were a huge influence to me. And then recently, you know, I didn't have Spotify or anything at the time, so I just had a few albums that I listened to, like the ones that I had on hand, the CDs that I had. So I had like a very deep, like instead of just knowing a lot of musicians, I was like very deep with the ones that I knew. And so deep with their music, I knew a lot of it. And so, you know, the Wailing Jinnies, they're like a folk trio that were just beautiful with their harmonizing. And so that sort of taught me harmonies. And then, you know, I was very much influenced by Taylor Swift. I remember when she first came out, my sister was like, because she knew I was going to be a writer or whatnot. And she was like, you guys have to hear this girl. She's like 12 and she's writing all of her own songs and it's all on acoustic guitar. And it's like the coolest thing ever. And so that was influential for me to see like a girl just writing songs. I'm sure she influenced a lot of girls my age. And then since I've moved to the Hudson Valley, I've met a lot of friends. I didn't have friends growing up. I'm serious. Very few. And so now that I've moved up here and discovered Spotify, my friends, including Carly, who's sitting in the room, just constantly share music with me. And so I've become saturated with all of her artists, Samia, Girl in Red, like just all these people that I had no idea who they were. And so that's been really fun to just discover new music as well.
So you grew up in South Carolina. You spent some time in South Africa, I think, and you can tell me about that if you'd like. And then eventually you got up here to the Hudson Valley. So can you give us a little bit of that arc and how you found this area and kind of bypassed New York City?
Yeah. I was actually going to move to Manhattan, which is I'll mention that too. So I'm from South Carolina. I lived there my whole life. And then in 2021, the end of 2021, I decided to move to Cape Town. I had met a boy. I was like, I want to start a new life. I just like want to do something like that, you know, start fresh. And so I've always dreamed of living abroad. And so I was like, well, Cape Town, like, that's a really cheap place to live for one. And it's beautiful. So I moved to Cape Town, was planning on staying for a month and a half, ended up staying for 2 years. And while I was there, I started my online production, songwriting, you know, freelancing, audio. Like, I edited a couple of podcasts, made a couple of podcast intros, just sort of whatever I could find. And this was all on Upwork and Fiverr. And then one of my first clients, this would have been back in like 2022, was a woman who wanted me to turn her husband's poems into a song as an anniversary gift. And so the woman's name was Tina, and the man, the husband's name was Matt, and that is now my record label.
Wow.
And so we made this song. It was called Super 8. And that was the first song we ever made together. The reference song was Mazzy Star, Fade Into You. And I'm like, I'm going to nail this. I love that song. It's totally same. My genre. And so I guess I nailed it because they loved it. And then Matt reached out to me directly and was like, you want to make an album? And I'm like, sure. I have so many clients. Everyone says they want to make an album or like collab. And I'm like, whatever, like, let's just do a couple songs and see where it goes. And so for the next like year and a half, we just made probably like 30, 35, 40 songs. I'm not even sure of the number, but we were working remotely. I was in Cape Town. They were in Jersey and I never saw their faces. I never had a video call. I never had a phone call. It was all via email. And I was like, this is great because this client is so easy to work with. He likes everything I put out. Like, he is awesome to talk to. He would send me these like beautifully written emails that were so poetically written, and I would just have so much fun responding in the same way. And so I really enjoyed working with him, regardless of whether we were making an album or not. So then Matthew's like, so we have David Barron to produce the album. And David Barron works with the Lumineers. He produced the song All About That Bass by Meghan Trainor. He's like arranged strings for Shawn Mendes' album, I think. He's insane. Someone told me yesterday he's like in the top 5% of producers right now. So I was like, like, I need to take this project serious. I like didn't even really believe any of this was happening. So I get on a call with Matt and David Barron. And I'm like, that's David Barron. Like, I was checking. I was like looking up a picture, like, is that actually David Barron? Because I was like, I don't know these people. And so it is. And within like 5 months after that, they're flying me to New York, Matt and Tina. And the day after I land, we're like filming a music video for a song that's not even recorded yet. Basically, I had produced all these demos for what the songs were going to be. And so we record this music video, and then me and our photographer that we work with, who picked me up from the airport, I also didn't know her. Luckily, we got along because she was going to be the one who's driving me around, photographing the studio the entire time we're there. So we explored the city for a few days, which was super cool. I've never been to Manhattan, really. Then we come up to Boyceville, New York, which is in the middle of nowhere. And I'm like, these people, they're going to kill me. Like, this can't be real, because they take me to Boyceville, there's no phone service. I'm staying in like this, you know, adorable but very small little Airbnb, and I'm like, this can't be real. Like, I started sharing my location with my sister. I'm like, I don't know, Davis. Like, this is really cool, but like, I don't know if this is real. And so, sure enough, I drive to David's studio, and we record the whole album in 18 days. Yeah, and it just turned out to be like the greatest gift an artist could ever ask for, because now they're my label and they're, you know, friends, and I'm one of two artists at the moment, and they actually, you know, care about me as an artist and are also creatively on the same page. Now, fast forward, you know, a year and a half later, and there's another album now, and it's really been incredible. Like, it's such a blessing. That's all I can say.
And you decided to stick around. This area resonates with you.
Yeah, I was planning on going back to Cape Town after we recorded the album, and then I was like, I can't. Like, why would I do that to myself when I have all these opportunities here, and you know, I have a team of people who are wanting to work on music with me. So I said goodbye to Cape Town. My ukulele is still there, which I'm really bummed about. I don't know how to ship it back. You have to fumigate the wood.
Oh, wow.
And then there's just like, it's like a crazy process to get it shipped back here. So I don't know what to do about that.
Who has it?
The boy that I that I knew back in Cape Town.
Keeping it safe, I hope. And then
I hope so.
Someday,
he's probably using it. Yeah. He's also a producer musician, so it's probably getting used. That would be my hope. Yeah, it's just been such a journey.
So that album that that started this whole thing, Stop Motion, and Super 8 being the song that came out of one of those poems?
Yeah, that was the first song we ever did together. And because it was the first song, that ended up being the first single we released too. And that was the video we were shooting when I went to New York, when I flew to New York that first day. And that song still is, you know, it's just a very special song, I think, to all of us, because it's just a beautiful love song. It's just like pure, it's almost like it's pure light. It's just, it's beautiful. And when we went into the studio with David, we have Chris Pazin playing this just amazing trumpet solo on the song. There's a reference in Super 8 to Louis Armstrong. And when we're in the studio, Matt's like, let's put a trumpet on it. And David's like, on a pop song? Like, what? Are you sure? And David's super open, so he's like, you know, we'll give it a shot. Can't hurt to just call up Chris Pazin and have him play on it. And I was like, okay, like, we'll see what happens. And that is like the highlight of the album now, this trumpet solo. And even to this day, when we play in Woodstock, we do a show at the Woodstock Way Hotel every year, sort of like to celebrate an album release. We still have Chris Basin come. We've done it twice now, and his trumpet is still like the highlight of the show. So all because of Matt's crazy idea to put a trumpet on the song, it's really become a beautiful part of the show. And also the way that we found David Barron and the way that we got him to work with us also goes back to Matt's crazy ideas.
Well, we've gone way too long without hearing something. So would you like to play a little Super 8 or anything off the new album?
Yeah, I'll play, since I have said it's a very special song. I didn't warm up my voice, so I'll play maybe like a first verse and a chorus. And then after this, I'll mention how Matt found David and that crazy story. So stay tuned.
One day I made a wish. I thought it would never come true. To swim forever in two seas of blue. But love wouldn't let me forget about you. Life is cypress trees and poppy fields, herds of goats and handmade meals.
And this is the Louis Armstrong reference.
Louis Armstrong songs as we stumble along. Hilltop towns and seas of green surround. And strolling cat alleys to make sure no one else is around. Every breathtaking moment, it's another celebration. Ooh, yeah, of the love that we found. It's another celebration. Of the love that we found.
We'll be right back with Ginger Nguyen right after this.
We believe nonpartisan, nonprofit news is essential to a healthy community. And as a Radio Catskill listener, we're guessing you feel the same way. We deliver fact-based journalism that holds the powerful accountable and keeps our community informed. Every story we produce is powered by listeners like you. And right now, through December 31st, your gift to Radio Catskill will be matched dollar for dollar, up to $1,000, by Newsmatch. Support local news and information. Give now at wjffradio.org. Thank you. Radio Catskill depends on donations from our listeners' music collections. People donate records, CDs, stereo equipment, and more. Donate your music collection today. Email feedback at wjffradio.org.
Welcome back to Cat's Cast. I'm Brett Barry, and this is Ginger Nguyen.
Walking between all the raindrops and sandals, no socks. Bippy plop plop in my flip flops and pitter patter drop. All this chatter, all this noise, and all these girls and these boys, all these toys, when will it slow down? I need to escape this town, find something to do, put some mud on boots, and it's coming down on me. He, find something to do, put some mud on boots, and it's coming down on me.
And we are back with Ginger Nguyen here in our Catskill studio by way of Kingston, New York, and other places before then, including her birth town in South Carolina.
Yes, yes. Lots of moving around.
Ginger, you have a couple of concerts coming up. Do you want to tell us about those and
sure.
When and where?
So I have two concerts coming up with the Lost Leaders. I'm very excited about these shows. They're super talented. I haven't actually met them in person yet, but I love their music. So the first one is November 15th at the Falcon in Marlboro. And then the second one is at November 21st at Park Theater in Hudson.
Great. So before the break, you were going to tell me about how your record label started collaborating with David Barron, prolific and talented producer who just happens to produce right here in the Catskills.
Yeah. He's actually from Boyceville, which I find cool because, you know, there's a lot of people move up here, but he's actually from Boyceville. So we have no connection with David Barron previously. And apparently the story is Matt and Tina, you know, they both are huge Lumineers fans. And they were listening to Brightside, the album Brightside by the Lumineers, in their listening room at their house. And so at this point, I think Matt had an idea. He wanted to make an album with me, but he didn't really have all the logistics worked out. So they're listening to this album, Brightside, and Matt's like, or Tina, I don't know which one, but they're like, this sound, like, this would be really cool for Ginger's voice. Like, you know, how the music sounds. I think it could match her style nicely. So they flip it over. They look on the back of the album. Basically, they're trying to find like a low-level person that might actually respond to the email. So the only name that they see who did the album is David Barron. And then Matt's like, well, what if we just send him an email? And so I've yet to read this email. I want to see this email so bad, but I just keep forgetting to ask to read it. Matt sends David this email out of the blue, cold calling, basically. Apparently, the title of the email, they made it Grahamsville. Because Tina's family, they had some land up here. It's in the Catskills. Matt's like, maybe he'll find this interesting. Like, what is this? So the only reason that David responds is he's in Grahamsville when he receives the email.
Oh, wow.
Grahamsville's very small.
Yeah.
It was his first time in Grahamsville. He thinks that the town of Grahamsville is emailing him. So he opens it. He reads this email. He's like, he finds Matt very interesting. So he just responds. Based on the fact that he's in Grahamsville and he finds Matt's email to be very interesting. And I've yet to read this email. I'm like, what is in this email? But again, it just goes out to, you know, it's like Matt's interesting personality. The same thing that really, you know, I enjoyed about working with him.
Yeah. Quirky thinking and just happening at the right time in the right place.
Yeah. Yeah.
So going back to how you kind of started in audio production, actually, you were in South Africa and listed on kind of these gig economy sites like Fiverr and Upwork. And so how did you learn those skills and what kind of jobs were you doing? And that was what led to writing music to these poems that your future record label person was writing. And that was a gift from his wife.
Yeah.
Very convoluted story.
But I know it's like, I'm getting better at explaining it as the years pass. But at first I was like trying to tell the story to people and they're like, what are you talking about?
So you were just kind of making ends meet in South Africa. So you're doing this audio production, working on editing and podcasts and sounds.
Yeah. Yeah. I basically like needed money, as simple as that. I went to Cape Town. I had a little bit saved, you know, COVID checks. And I was like, well, I can't get a job in Cape Town because that's illegal, you know, because I didn't have a work visa. And so I was like, well, what am I good at? And because I dropped out of high school and I planned this, I was like, I'm going to have I have no plan B. So I have to succeed in the music industry. And so I'm like, well, the only thing I'm really skilled at is music at this point, other than the pastry chef job that I had, which I couldn't do in Cape Town. So I was like, I'm good at music. I have to obviously do this online because that's, you know, I can't work in person here. I don't think I would have the same drive to build that business again because I was working 8 hours a day, every single day for 2 years. I think for the first year, I never took a day off. I was just grinding. And the only reason I was so motivated is because in my mind, I'm like, if I, you know, fail and like this business doesn't work, then I have to move back to South Carolina. And I'm like, oh, I just don't want to do that. So I was so motivated to stay in Cape Town. It was just like typical 22-year-old, like, I'm gonna figure this out. And so I had a Logic Pro. I was learning new skills about music production. The person I was living with, he was also a producer, so he was teaching me everything he was learning, producing, mixing, editing, like all those things. And so I started producing in 2020. I got Logic and everything. Of course, I messed around in GarageBand a bit before that. But, you know, I feel like the only reason I became as skilled as I was so quickly is because I was like basically forced to work on Logic for 8 hours a day. Mm-hmm. And I was picking up any jobs that I could. I was editing this one girl's podcast. I made a couple podcast intros. I made like an R&B rap song for this digital Web3 security company. I'd made a couple songs for them, which was actually really fun. They would like send me all their business principles and be like, turn this into a song. And I'm like, how do I do that?
Wow.
So it was really like taught me a lot. So I worked with so many people, and it was such a diverse business that I learned so much, and I just had so many new skills so quickly. And you know, all those production skills I was able to apply to the songs I was making with Matthew. And so when we went to the studio with David, you know, like I said, I had all these rough demos with, you know, drums, harmonies, instruments, guitars, like, you know, rough demos. And he actually used some of what I had on the song, which was like such an honor to see him actually use, like, the song Averna. He kept, like, I would say probably 85% of what I created. And yeah, like, now at this time I have a studio set up in Kingston, and that's like still something that I do. And I'm starting to work with other artists, which is really exciting, like have them come into my studio. Wow. and work and stuff.
When I was listening to Freeze Frame, which is your latest album, I was noticing there were a lot of sound elements and sound effects and things like that. Mm-hmm. Does that, some of that come from your experience in production?
Yeah, I think so. So when we did Freeze Frame, the producer for Freeze Frame was one of David Barron's, somebody he knows, AJ Yorio out of Ohio. So I flew to Ohio to record that album, which was really fun. Cincinnati. Again, I had some rough demos, so we kept a lot of the sounds from the rough demos. Basically, we kind of stripped down the tracks and said, like, what are we keeping, what are we not keeping? And AJ, I feel like it was almost like we both sort of gave a lot to the album, because he gave a lot of ideas, a lot of, you know, we changed some of the chords to parts of the songs, and like he had, you know, he's a guitar player as his main instrument, so there's a lot of really cool guitar sounds and stuff that isn't on Stop Motion. On a train that's gonna go down, are we gonna stop, should we slow down? Directions are lost in the snow now, we need to slow down, flying on a plane going nowhere, it's fun to be on the way to nowhere.
What's the undercurrent of Freeze Frame?
So when I was in Cape Town, like I said, me and Matt wrote, you know, 30, 40 songs. So there was already like the long-term plan of, okay, first let's make two albums, maybe a third, we'll see. And we knew that there was going to be Stop Motion and Freeze Frame. So we decided this, you know, years ago. Stop Motion was going to be more of the like upbeat, lighthearted album. Freeze Frame was going to be the darker, you know, dark undertones, more about loss, and that'll be that album. So the really the only thing we were figuring out was like, this one's going to be happier, this one's going to be sadder and darker. And it's interesting because between making the two albums, I lost my dad, and so Freeze Frame was predominantly written, it was already going to be dark, and so a lot of the lyrics were written. We wrote a few more songs and added it to Freeze Frame, but singing those songs, there was like a whole new meaning to the loss in the album. So that was really interesting because we re-recorded all the vocals for Freeze Frame post losing my dad. And so it was so like therapeutic to sing those songs and have like the pain captured in a way. Like, I don't know, that sounds like psychotic, but it was very, very helpful. Like, I wrote a song about my dad, which I released. It's not on any of the albums. It's on an EP that we released called Reflections. It was just very healing to make that album at the time. We made it like 2 months after losing him, and it was, you know, like he was one of my biggest supporters, so he would have wanted me to make that album. And it's ironic because it's the album he would have loved the most, because it's the most indie rock, which is what he really liked. So I would give anything for him to hear it, but it wouldn't sound like the way it sounds if he was here. Hmm. So it's like he's in the album, which is, you know, something that makes me feel a little better.
Is there a song on that album that's particularly meaningful that you'd want to play for us?
I would play Freezing. I have to tune my guitar down.
Tell me about that guitar as you're tuning it down.
So this guitar, my dad actually got me this guitar in 2015. So I've had it for 11 years now. And when I was taking a train once, I forgot it on the train. This was before he passed away, and I lost it on Amtrak. Like, how do you get in touch with Amtrak? And so somehow Tina got in touch with Amtrak, and it ended up in Albany. They, like, held it for me in Albany. So I almost lost this guitar forever. I now have put air tags in my case, so that will never happen again. But I didn't really like this guitar at first because it was really bright, because it's a smaller...
Is that considered a parlor guitar, or?
I don't think, I'm honestly not sure if parlor and three-quarter is the same thing, but it's a three-quarter size guitar.
Yeah, which makes it really great for travel. Unless you leave it on a train.
Yeah, that's like definitely, you don't want to do that. Would not recommend anyone doing that, but it's nice for recording because it's a smaller body, so it's not as woofy as like a, you know, bigger guitar. And then this ended up being the guitar that I kept long-term. It's the only acoustic guitar that I really play with most of the time. And the wood, sometimes I forget to mention this, the wood is koa, which is Hawaiian.
Yeah.
And the reason my dad got me a ukulele is because his mother was Hawaiian Chinese. She was actually in Hawaii when the Pearl Harbor bombings happened. She was like in third grade, I think, or so. So it sort of like all connects back to the Hawaiian roots that I have, which no one believes me when I say that, because they're like, you're so pale. Like, how could you be part Hawaiian? But yeah. So this song is called Freezing. We wrote it after there's like pre-dad passing, post-dad passing. Like, it helps me to talk about it. Like, I'm very open about it. And so this song is interesting. So AJ Yorio, the producer, he had this track. When I flew to Ohio, there was a blizzard, like a horrible blizzard. I wasn't able to go into the studio when I first got there. So I was just in my Airbnb like, well, I'm here. What am I supposed to do? So AJ sends me a track. I brought some of my recording gear so I could just mess around while I was not in the studio. So Matt had sent me these lyrics and AJ had sent me this track. And I was like, I think those might go together. And so doing the little like clay shaping that I like to do, I sort of put it all together. And this is what the song turned into. It's really short, so I'll probably play the whole thing.
We could freeze time and keep those memories alive in a hidden mind. And every once in a while, we could break through. Down we could climb in, down into the frozen cold mine. We look through the to freeze with crackling pain. Shaking knees, please, oh please, please, oh please, I need it, I need to freeze the frame. Just one more text, just one more talk. I wish we could have taken that walk that we always said we would do. Haunting down in my shoes. My voice, they all told me, haunts me in all I see. I need to freeze the frame. I need to freeze the frame.
Yeah.
It's a short one. And then, yeah, AJ sent me the track. Matt sent me his stream of consciousness. And then that song was born. And we ended up putting it on the album because it just seemed to fit the vibe so well.
How do you decide what you'll play when you're live in concert?
When I first started performing up here, I really like to be prepared and like have a set list. And, you know, I would text with Matt, like, you know, what are we playing tonight? Like, I don't know what I want to play. Like, you tell me what to play. So sometimes he would send me ideas, and sometimes I would like feel led to play certain songs. I don't really know what makes me want to play certain songs and not play certain songs.
Are you on stage alone, or do you have other musicians with you?
So it depends on the show. Last Sunday, I played with Jack Petrozelli and Will Bryant. They're wonderful sessions musicians and performers and artists that play up here in the Hudson Valley a lot and all over the world, actually. But I did a show with Carly Pearl and Pamela Laws, and I was playing myself with Jack and Will, so guitar and piano, and then myself on acoustic guitar. So that's one way to play a show. Sometimes I'll have a full band for the waterfall shows that we do out in Woodstock. Usually it's always at the full band. And then most of the time I'm just solo. Sometimes I play with my loop pedal. That's been like a new addition that, you know, just to liven up the live performance. There's something about like solo acoustic guitar that just really allows like time for introducing each song, and I don't know. I definitely feel like I make a deeper connection with people when it's just me and my guitar.
Can you give us a sense of who else is involved with Ginger Wynn, the musical force?
Yeah.
So, you know, who plays with you, your producers, engineer, you've touched on some of this.
Mm-hmm.
We have someone else sitting in the room right now, so maybe you can just tell us, you know, like what goes into making a success of this as a career and that kind of whole support crew.
Yeah. I feel like as an artist, it is nearly impossible, or at least a lot harder, to do everything yourself. And so when we first came up to the Hudson Valley, and, you know, still to this day, we really enjoy working with local Hudson Valley talent. And even in the beginning, when we were shooting music videos and, you know, having photographers, for the most part, everyone is either from or living in the Hudson Valley. So I feel like through that, we've created a really, you know, tight creative community. And a lot of it is through Rewind in Kingston. So Rewind is, you know, it's actually my favorite thrift store because they, you know, source really cool clothes. It's not just like, you know, thrift. It's like good thrifted clothes for a really reasonably priced. And so that store is owned by the Floods, and they've just become a huge part of, you know, the Ginger Wynn brand or whatever.
Yeah.
And they do the Heart of Midtown Festival, which is, you know, a mental health festival, bringing awareness to mental health, you know, trying to help the community in any way that they can. And so it's been really cool, like blending what we do with what they do. And through them, you know, I've met even more people because they're locals and they know everyone here. And their daughter, Carly Flood, is sort of like the Ginger Wynn creative director / does a lot. And so it's me, Carly. I would say like the root force of the brand is me, Carly, and then Tina and Matthew, the husband and wife duo of Keep Good Company Records, my record label.
And Carly Flood is the person who's in the room with us right now.
Yes, that is Carly Flood. She's also like my taxi driver a lot of the times. So that's nice. / merch table, you know, manager or whatever. But yeah, I feel like working with local people and working with creative people who are passionate about what they do, that's sort of like the heart of the brand. And it, you know, creates, like, from that, the product is really good art.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And as you said, lots of creative people in these parts, which is really great.
It's saturated with creative people, which it still blows my mind to this day.
Ginger, in a 2025 Spotify world, how difficult is it to make a career out of music?
Making a living as a musician just from streaming is, you know, virtually impossible. So, you know, then there's touring. That's another way to make money. I do enjoy touring. It's not really like my long-term goal. Like, I don't want to tour my life away is what I say. So, you know, knowing that, I feel like you sort of have to like be creative, like figure out, okay, well, what else do you really want to do as a musician? And so what I've sort of come up with and what we've sort of come up with is, you know, producing long-term, like producing other artists, which is, you know, something I'm really passionate about too. That's sort of something that I see myself doing long-term. And then writing for other people, you know, it's almost like planting little seeds and like seeing where they go. and sync licensing. That's something that's really interesting that we're, you know, getting our foot in the door with. Basically, you know, music for TV, movies, commercials, anything like that, which sort of goes back to what I was doing on when I was freelancing. Mm-hmm. So I really enjoy that. And then scoring movies, that's something that I really want to get into. I possibly am starting my first one now, so we'll see what happens.
Wow.
But yeah, I feel like music, as long as it's something music related, that's, it's sort of like where I see myself long term. And like, you know, I feel like it's, you know, the music business is a hard industry, but you just sort of have to be creative. And I feel like, not that you have to, but again, it's just so helpful to have a team of people who are behind you and also coming up with ideas and, you know, also making connections and meeting people and are sort of in your corner. So I feel like if you do those things, then it's just a lot easier. And just, you know, put out the best work you can. Like, that's another thing that's, you know, if you're putting out really good work and you're committed and you show up to things relatively on time, you're already like way ahead of everyone else.
Yes.
And just, you know, I've heard that, you know, being an easy person to work with is a huge plus in your corner. So yeah, it's a tough industry, but it is possible. I think it's possible to do it full time and make it.
Yeah, it's really smart what you're saying. Talent gets you so far.
Mm-hmm.
Showing up, being someone who can collaborate,
yeah,
also
that's
so important.
That's a huge thing, for sure.
So your first two albums, Stop Motion and Freeze Frame, were always in the cards, as you said. Is there a plan for a third?
So I think that there will be a third. I'll leave a little mystery there, because mm-hmm. why not? But yeah, definitely many projects in the future. Like I said, producing other artists. I've started producing other people and seeing what that comes to. Maybe that leads to collaborations or records that they release, the artists release themselves. So I don't know. I feel like another thing with the music industry, it's a good thing to be open. You know, I don't really know what will happen next. I would have never guessed I would be living in New York 3 years ago. So yeah. Yeah. It's a fun industry too, because you never know what's going to happen.
And what do you like to do when you're not playing music?
I like to cook. That's one thing I really enjoy. I feel like one thing I've been having to figure out is, you know, performing, whether one enjoys it or not, it just takes energy. You know, it's like you're giving energy to the audience. And so one thing I've been thinking about recently and trying to figure out is, you know, how do I like recharge once I do something like a show or an event or whatnot. And so, you know, I really enjoy being outside and like, you know, it, for some reason, like when I'm by running water, I just feel nice. Mm-hmm. Living in South Carolina, I would go to a creek that we had on our farm and just like sit by it. And I never really noticed I did that a lot. And then when I left and, you know, went to Cape Town and like moved into my first apartment, that wasn't an option. And I think that was like sort of a downside to living there. And then now living in Kingston, Kingston's like right on the water. And so it's nice to have that ability to just like walk down to the water and recharge. It's been great because, you know, studio time, you're in the studio, you're on a computer, you're inside, you're usually in a dark room. For some reason, studios are always so dark. And so it's like, how do you balance that? Well, you have to kind of go outside and like do real things with your eyes that you know, you're not looking at a screen. So balancing is like what I try to do when I'm not doing music.
Yeah. And no shortage of creeks in the Catskills. So that's a good thing.
Yeah. It's, I can see why people like to come up here to record. Yeah. Like, I can see why there's a lot of studios in the Catskills. They get away from the city, get away from all other human contact.
So Ginger, just as a reminder, we'll be playing at the Falcon in Marlborough, New York on November 15th. And the Park Theater in Hudson, New York on November 21st. And you can find out more about Ginger Wynn at gingerwynn.com. Do you want to play one more song for us we close up shop here?
Geez, I forgot to think about what I'm going to play. It should be a pretty exciting set at the two shows. Like, it's possible that we're playing some songs together. Maybe I'll sing some harmonies on their songs.
Wow.
You never know. There's two practices coming up, so that's why I don't know, because we haven't had those practices yet. But I think it'll be something fun. Carly, what should I play? I feel like you always like have the best suggestion. Good call. Yes, so this one is sort of about like having anxiety social anxiety even when you're all alone. Like, it's unreasonable, or, you know, it doesn't really make any sense, but sometimes you still have it. Having anxiety in a forest is sort of the term. It's called escape. And we filmed the video actually up here in the Catskills at, what was the place? Catterskill. And we had a wolf dog too. It was very fun. It's called Escape.
These eyes. I wish for blindness sometimes. See not too much. There's more than enough noises. No, not in my mind. Just outside. There's too many noises in daily life. Hear all the talks. Need headphones just to walk around the corner to the corner shop. And I watched the flames dance on your face. Alone in a room, I still feel out of place. Anxiety in such an empty space. It's just me and you, and the forest awaits. Do you see through the peace on my face? Me and the trees, nothing there to fear. There's nothing out there except me. Knowing myself, the only way to wealth. There's nothing to fear in these trees. There's nothing to fear inside of me. Except me, except me. Except, except, no, no, except me. Spinning dusty vinyls and chasing tapestry. I lost count of all the people mad at me. But I learned to let it go. They keep inventory, so exactly ain't. But I enjoy the show they see. Knowledge of self, oh, what's the math you see? You can't push the river, but you can divert the stream. Dive into and come out on the other side. Live to live another life, my skin is single ply. Who knows just how many times that I'll die? Maybe we think it's once, but maybe it's never mind. Me and the trees, nothing there to fear. There's nothing out there except me. Knowing myself, the only way to wealth. There's nothing to fear in these trees. There's nothing to fear inside of me. Except me, except me. Except, except, no, no, except me. Except me. Accept me, accept and accept and no, no, accept me. There's nothing to fear except the fear of me. There's nothing to fear except the fear of me.
That's Ginger Wynn, with concerts in Marlborough and Hudson later this month. Info at gingerwynn.com. I'm Brett Barry, and this is Cats Cast. Saturdays on Radio Catskill and online at catscast.com, home of the original podcast with a full episode archive, transcripts, and more. This week, the podcast heads to Gilboa, New York, where a fossil forest reflects a tropical landscape that's 380 million years old. You can find that story and many more at catscast.com. Whether you're joining us on your favorite podcast app or right here on Radio Catskill, thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Jeff Bank, Sullivan County's oldest independent community bank, offering deposit and loan products for more than 110 years. Members FDIC and Equal Housing Lender. National Mortgage Licensing System and Registry Identification Number 405318. More information at jeff.bank. And from the Sullivan Catskills Visitors Association, dedicated to promoting the Sullivan County Catskills. SullivanCatskills.com. And from listeners like you.
Radio Catskill, keeping you connected with the local edition.
weeknights at 6, right after All Things Considered. The Local Edition, only on Radio Catskill.
This is Callison Stratton, host of Liberation Station, a show that highlights the work of female and femme presenting performers. Liberation Station airs Saturday nights at 7 o'clock, only on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, this is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.